It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside former Packer Brian Belaga, here's Alex Stroff.
The best 60 minutes of your day. It is the Homer Hour right here on ESPN Milwaukee, ESPN Beaver Dam. No Homer yet again today. He's back tomorrow, the rest of the week, I think. Right, Pebble? He's back the rest of the week?
As far as I know, unless he gets another golf invite, he'll be here Tuesday through Friday.
Unless he gets another golf invite. That's why I'm here. Homer's golfing. Joining me, as he does each and every Monday, right here on the Homer Hour. The 2010 first-round pick for the Green Bay Packers, 10-year Packers vet, Super Bowl champion. And I believe Homer has donned him the doctor of football. Is that right, Brian Belaga?
Yeah, that is. That is. That's Homer's thing, man. That was like day one. That was like day one Homer. That was like day one Homer. Well, he came up with that immediately.
I imagine he's talking to somebody. He goes, wait a minute, this guy knows what the hell he's talking about, unlike a lot of the guys that work around here. So that earns you the nickname. The doctor. Obviously, big news today, Brian, as your former teammate, Jair Alexander, released by the Green Bay Packers. Was Brian Gutekunst's first ever draft pick back in 2018 when Goody took over for the late Ted Thompson as the GM in Green Bay. But ultimately, you know, as we've talked about many, many times, whether it's on this show, whether it's on KBN, whether it's on Green Bay Game Day, which we talked plenty about him last season during our pregame show, availability is the best ability. And frankly, Jair Alexander just hasn't been available that often, and I think that's ultimately what this boiled down to, right?
I think so. I mean, and it's unfortunate because I still believe, and I think a lot of people believe, that ability is there, right?
Like, yeah, totally.
This is not a case of, like, ability is gone, he's 32 years old, and he can't, like, this is not that at all. It's just been the last, I think, what, 3 years or 2 years? I don't know the exact stats on it, but like he's just had some issues with staying on the field. And you look at the number that he's making this year, I think it was like 16-4, 16-8, whatever it may be. And if they were to release him, what they're saving on the cap and kind of you look at what, If you keep him and you're not sure of his availability week to week, what that does to a defensive coordinator and how does he plan and everything like that, I think from a standpoint of availability and just from a financial standpoint, I think Goody looked at it at all those things, right, keeping everyone in mind while doing that and made the decision he thought was right. Obviously, they tried to get something done, right? I mean, tried to negotiate an incentive-based deal, which whenever you hear that, most likely that's probably not good for the player one way or another, right? Like, I mean, I'm all for making guys earn it. That's fine. That's cool. But when we're talking about a guy that's making 16-8, and we're saying we got to cut it down incentive-based, I mean, chances are you're cutting that salary down significantly to the point where his base salary is probably, I'd say, under $7 million. Yeah. And you're asking him to earn a lot of that back. And that's going to be a guy's going to go, you know what? I don't think so. Like, you know, it's going to be tough for him, right? And the counter argument to that, you mean, a lot of people may say, well, where's he going to get that on the open market? You know what? He may not get it, but it's a, you listen, man, there's a pride factor in this as well, right? Like, it's not just a there's more to it than just what meets the eye with a lot of these things too, all right? Like, it's I get that it seems simple and it should be easy. It's not. There's other things to it. But from the Packers' standpoint, this was the move that made most sense to Goody. They tried to work things out. It didn't work out. And now they, you know, the room that they have is the room that they have, unless something wild happens during camp and they make a move or something weird happens, which I don't see that happening, right? Like, that's most likely not going to happen. The guys who they have is who they have, and that's who's going to have to, you know, carry the load throughout the year.
Yeah, it's fascinating to always see how these injury situations play out, Brian. And obviously, I mean, we can talk a little bit about your experience toward the end of your career in Green Bay. But, you know, David Bakhtiari, I think, is the one Jair most often gets compared to, because when those guys, both of those guys, when they were on the field, they were damn good, right? Former All-Pros are former All-Pros for a reason, because they're that good. But the big question with both of them was when or if they are on the field. And ultimately, as we led the show with, not enough availability, despite still having the ability. So this is ultimately what I think we all saw coming for months and months and months. But you said something earlier with the guys on KBN that I want to dive into a little bit deeper, and that is you were surprised it took this long, which I think is the takeaway for a lot of us, right? Because Goody said back in March before free agency, yeah, we're trying to trade him. We put a lot of investment into him. Would like to get something back. Unable to find a dancing partner, and here we are, and ultimately June 9th it took until to get through that. Why do you think it took so long? Were they holding out hope for a trade? Were they kind of waiting to see if, to your earlier point on the restructure that they offered, do you think they were waiting to see if, you know, he would budge and come a little bit closer to what they wanted? What do you think took so long here? Because this is a unique one.
Yeah, I mean, it's normally not the way Green Bay operates. Right, like they don't normally operate this way. They normally are pretty, they're pretty even keel, and they get business done early, right? Like if they want to make a move, they get it done, and they get it done early, and they move on, and they continue as business as usual. And the way this one went on was just different. I think he wanted something in return. If he could get a trade, he wanted something. Whether that was a seventh round pick, whether that whatever it may be. I think Goody wanted to find a trade partner. Well, I think as you continue to move on, right, through the draft or through free agency and nothing comes to fruition, that thought kind of goes away, right? Like that's probably not going to happen. You've kind of gone through that period where a trade is most likely and it's not going to happen. So then the next thought is, okay, we've kept him this long, right? And we still know that he could be, or he still is a good player. If we could somehow figure this out, because if he wasn't a good player anymore, they would have moved on already, right? Like it would have already been done or settled. I mean, they would have got this done before the combine, most likely, like, or when they could have at the start of the new league year, technically. And then they try to push this thing all the way until they could, right? Until the start of the mandatory minicamp, where he probably was going to show up, so he didn't start getting fined. And they push it all the way up to that to see if they could work something out to keep him, retain him, and it just didn't work. Because I think it shows how they view him as a player, right? I think that's a compliment to him, how they view him, that they think highly of him, and they did, in fact, probably want to keep him, right? Like, I think the way they tried to negotiate and actually try to keep him on the team, they wanted him, but at a certain number, right? And a certain incentive-based package. And Jair's team, and he thought some, you know, probably that we understand it has to be incentive-based, but in a different fashion or in a different structure, so to speak. And they just couldn't come to terms with it. But, you know, once the draft came and gone, the trade stuff was dead. Like it was gone. Totally. Like that wasn't happening anymore. Yep. There was not going to be a trade. So now it was just working out a deal, and they took it all the way up till they could, and just never came.
I think you're right on that. Brian Bulaga, Alex Stroph with you, hanging out on the Homer Hour here on ESPN Wisconsin. We can get into this a bit more later, Brian, but where's your confidence level at for this defense? It's year two under Halfley, so naturally you would expect at least some sort of step amongst all those groups. But on paper, and games are not won on paper, let's make that very clear while I say this, but on paper, I would say they took a slight hit today by losing Jair Alexander on that depth chart. But where's the confidence level year two under Halfley for this defense in 2025?
Yeah, I mean, I feel really good about this defense, right? And I think, obviously, I mean, you said it, I would have felt like really good with Jair, right? Like, and I say that with keeping in mind that obviously he hadn't been as available as much even last year and the year prior, but I always go into seasons as a player and a guy that has had injuries, is optimistic that, like, hey, that's in the past. We're moving forward. This is a new start, right? Like, this is a new year. So I look at it even from this side of the table as optimistic, right? Like, hey, this is like a new start. And I looked at it too, right? If he reworked this deal and he's going to be a free agent, he's playing for something, right? He's playing for a new deal somewhere else in the NFL. So he's also very motivated to make this work. So I thought that if he would have stayed, this defense would have looked a lot different. But okay, so he's not here, right?
Yep.
I'm still very optimistic about the defense. I still think in year two, they have a lot of really good pieces on this defense. Like, they didn't lose anyone technically, besides obviously Jair leaving. They didn't lose anybody, right? And that's important because you look at how this defense finished last year. I understand they lost against Philly, but again, I'll continue to repeat it. From when that game ended, they didn't play as bad in that Philly game as how that game went. They actually played pretty good in that Philly game. So if you look at how they finished the year last year, not just the Philly game, but the kind of the last four or five games, they played really well. So I like the momentum they were carrying into the offseason, and I think guys a year into it, more comfortable, more familiar with the scheme, and I think the rookies taking another year, another step, and we have a lot of exciting second-year players now. I think there's a lot of young, exciting talent, you know, like Cooper and those guys. I think sky's the limit. I think the question is, right, and this was always going to be the question, and it was the question going into the offseason, and now it's still the question, is, and maybe you add one to it, is the pass rush and the secondary going to hold up? Does one hold up for the other, right? Because you kind of look at the run game. I feel good about the run, like the run, you know, against the run. I feel pretty good against that, yeah. Like, and how this defense plays that. Like, I feel good about that. But the way the pass rush holds up for the secondary and vice versa, how they balance each other out, that is the key term or key relationship on this defense, and they have to balance each other out, right? So if our DBs are able to hold up and play really good coverage, well, that gives our D-line that extra second to get home, or vice versa. If our D-line is able to get home super quick, our DBs don't have to cover for too long, and the quarterback has to get rid of the ball quick, and our DBs can jump routes and make plays. So it's how does that relationship work itself out in year two, and that's what I'm excited to see, and do the guys make a step in year two?
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I just saw this nugget from Matt Schneidman, and we're going to talk about all three of these guys coming up because I want to dive a little bit more into what you were just talking about coming up next with that defense, especially the defensive backs. And then later I want to get into something you've talked plenty about the last few weeks, the Elgton Jenkins situation, as he reports the mandatory minicamp in Green Bay earlier today. But this from Matt Schneidman: with the release of Jair Alexander, now only three players remain from Matt LaFleur's first Packers team, which Brian was a part of in 2019. Kenny Clark, Elgton Jenkins, Rashawn Gary. That is the list. Just three players left from LaFleur's first year in 2019. We will dive deeper into the Packers defense and the expectations for the defensive backfield as Jair Alexander officially released by the Packers earlier today. He's Brian Bulaga, the Packers Super Bowl champion. I'm Alex Strove, hanging out with you. It's the Homer Hour, ESPN Wisconsin. Monday night, June 9th, Alex Strove, Brian Bulaga, the former Packers offensive tackle, hanging out with you, ESPN Milwaukee, ESPN Beaver Dam. And it's summertime, baby. Brian's going to tell us about his friends over at Surfside.
That's right. I want to talk to everyone about my friends at Surfside. Summer is heating up, and there is nothing more refreshing than an ice-cold Surfside iced tea and vodka, or Surfside lemonade and vodka, to break the heat. I love Surfside so much because it doesn't have that nasty, sweet, sugary taste that makes you regret drinking it after a few sips. There's so many great flavors, like my favorite, the half tea, half lemonade, peach tea, raspberry lemonade, and so many more. Made with real brute tea and real vodka, Surfside is only 100 calories, 2 grams of sugar, and zero bubbles. That's right, no carbonation, so it's easy to sip and enjoy no matter what your plans are this weekend. Look for the can with the sunset stripes, sold at bars, restaurants, and stores near you. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly.
Diving back into the Jair Alexander situation, as the Packers officially release the former All-Pro, former first-round pick, back in 2018. That was Brian Gutekunst's first draft as the general manager. I don't know where Mark Murphy was today, but Dave Schrader from WBAY Channel 2 up in Green Bay caught him at a golf course somewhere. I don't know where he was golfing as soon as this news came out, Brian. But thought Murphy's comments is he's got just a couple weeks left on the job as the president and CEO of the Packers. Were insightful and interesting for a couple different reasons. Here's the Packers president and CEO, Mark Murphy, earlier today.
He's been a great player for us. Obviously, elite talent and, unfortunately, just injured a lot. And, it's kind of unfortunately, that's a big part of our game.
When you look at the construction of the roster this year, obviously it leaves a hole when you lose a lockdown corner like him. What do you feel about the team's ability to absorb that type of hit?
I feel pretty good. I think Keyshawn Nixon, what a great story. He's undrafted, all-pro returner. And, the reality is for, like, the last 4 years, Jair, it's about half of the games he's been able to play. So, kind of we've been used to it.
There you go. We've kind of been used to it from Mark Murphy, the president and CEO of the Packers, in response to Jair Alexander being released. Thought there were a couple things that stuck out there, Brian, and I'm curious if you kind of heard the same thing I did listening to that one. The immediate mention of Keyshawn Nixon was something I found interesting there. He didn't mention Carrington Valentine. He didn't mention Nate Hobbs. He mentioned Keyshawn Nixon, who I will say, I'm no expert. You know a heck of a lot more than me. Not that we need to say that out loud. I thought he did a nice job when he played outside in Jair's absence last year. Now, does that sell me that he's a bona fide number one corner or a top corner in the league? No, but I liked what I saw, and I'm hoping there can be some improvement year two in the Jeff Hafley defense, specifically for Keyshawn Nixon, who's going to play, I imagine, a significant role.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not going to sit here and say I know DB play or I'm an expert in DB play. I mean, I know some about it. I know I got to play with some guys that were really good at it. Jair's one of them, obviously. I got to be around him. I got to be around Sam Shields and Tremont and some guys that were really talented at the position. Didn't get to play. I mean, Wood played multiple all over the place, so I got to watch Wood play. Wood played everywhere, so you got to watch him just do his thing and how great he was everywhere, just being a defensive back in general. So I'm not going to sit here and say I know if Nixon is like a lockdown, DB or CB number one. I have no idea. But he did do some nice things last year. There's no doubt. And like what he said in the offseason going into the offseason that he's confident that he's, CB number one or whatever he said, I like that. I kind of like, a little bit of swagger and a little bit of confidence that he wants that title. Now, what comes with that title is number one wide receivers, they're going to go at you. Because if you say that, they're okay, that sounds good. If that's what you want to be, we're going to come at you with that then. And that's the St. Browns, that's the Jeffersons, that's all those guys. That's the island you're going to be on, right? And that's the island that Jair lived on for a long time, right? That's where he was for a long time, and he did pretty good on it, right? So if he's able to do that and take on that role, that does so much for this defense. Because I said it with Jair, if he was able to stay healthy and I like Mark Murphy. Obviously, he was the president for the team. My entire time there, I like him a lot, but sometimes it comes off in a way that we just had to deal with it for the last 4 years, so we're used to it. I just don't like the way that, what I'm saying? It comes off in a certain way to me that I just don't really, I don't know, man.
Brian, he is incredible at putting his foot in his mouth, right? Saying things he probably shouldn't say, and this dates back to a couple of years ago. And I'm sure you remember this one because it was all over the place. He was at the Wisconsin girls high school basketball tournament at the Res Center he announced on the WIA network that there would be a divorce coming between him, the Packers, and Aaron Rodgers. That's how the news came out about that one, at a high school basketball tournament. So he is amazing at, kind of practicing his stand-up comedy routines in places he probably shouldn't.
Yeah, like I just, and the thing is, like, and here's the thing, like, I know he means no harm by
it. Oh, of course.
Like, that's the thing, like, and like, I know he does, he's not like a, he's, he's like one of the nicest guys. Like, that's the thing, but like it comes off in a way like Jair was like trying to be hurt for the last three, like, yeah, like I know he wasn't, like, you know what I'm saying?
So, like, I can tell you, he probably wanted to play, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's a good chance he wanted to play. So, like, that's the only thing that comes, like, with that whole thing, like, I just, like that's the one thing about that clip that just, I kind of, I just didn't, you know, I listened to that clip and it comes off that way to me. But besides that, like, if Nixon can do that and literally for this defense, take away a side, right, or like really negate a side, right? Like, you know, make one side of the field feel small for an offense. That does so much for a, you know, Halfley's defense, right? He could do and mix so many coverages up on opposite ends of the field. You can move around McKinney in so many different ways. Then he doesn't have to cover so many different ends of the field because now we have two DBs that he, or two corners that he has to play cover for. It does a lot of things, right? Like it does a lot of things. So I hope so. I really hope so. I mean, cause that would be, a pleasant surprise, and obviously it'd be good for Nixon because financially that would be something very positive for him.
Totally, 100% for him. Yeah, no doubt about that. But I'll tell you this, Brian, the thing I'm so excited about with this defense in year two under Halfley is it seems like they've been targeting guys that, to your point, can kind of play all over the place. Keyshawn has proven he can do it. Nate Hobbs has proven in Vegas that he could do it. A kind of under the radar signing that I really liked, a depth signing from this offseason, was Isaiah Simmons, who can play both linebacker and safety. Javon Bullard can play a little corner in the nickel. Like, they've got a lot of versatility in the defensive backfield, and I think that is going to be something really fun to experiment with. And as a fan, watch how Halfley and company kind of scheme up some different things in the defensive backfield, to your point, with Nixon and Bullard and Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney, et cetera. They've got so many guys that can play all over the place and contribute in different ways. And that's something I think, you know, in the midst of this Jair saga and whether you like it or not that they moved on from him, that's been lost. They have a really creative defensive mind in Jeff Halfley running the show and a bunch of dudes that can play all over the field. I think that's something to keep an eye on as we quickly approach training camp and eventually the season.
Yeah, I mean, and now that, I mean, let's just be real, the NFL has essentially gone to nickel defense for, you know, lack of a better word, like this is the passing league. I mean, obviously there's situations that it's there's, you know, running in some certain teams you play, you know, Philly and you play Detroit in some cases.
Right. Might stack the box a little bit more in those scenarios,
yeah,
but
yeah. But for the most part, you're a nickel defense, right? So you got a lot of DBs on the field, and when you got guys that are able to move in different positions, right, and they're able to not just stay in one spot the entire game, right, and it not only does it, like, and I don't want to get too in depth with this because it only impacts a couple guys, right? Like, it impacts the quarterback because he's used to seeing certain bodies in certain numbers in certain places for identification purposes, for knowing where the nickel is or where the, or if they're in dime defense or where the dime is or where the safeties are. And like the quarterback is very in, you know, well aware of those things because that's how he's able to identify coverages and pressures and things like that. So like, it's very big for the quarterback. And then for the offensive lineman, picking up pressures as well, like slot pressures and nickels and, you know, the safety rotations. And so we identify a lot on numbers and things like that and just who guys are. Well, if you got all these guys that are flowing in and out of the game because they can play multiple positions and guys are jumping from corner to nickel to safety and back and forth, that's tough. And it's tough on an offense because quarterbacks are constantly having to refresh their memory of who's who and who's playing the slot or who's playing the safety. And it's not something that you think is very hard, but when you're in the midst of a game, right, and you're just, you just want to be able to identify who the slot, like who the nickel is or who the safety is, and it's a new number. You're just like, all right, like who is, like what is this? And it becomes a little bit of a pain in the butt. Like, that's just what it is. So he has that going for him too. And all these guys that are able to be very versatile and multiple in where they play is a big bonus. I mean, it really is. I mean, I'm not saying that they're, you can make guys go be a number one corner. I'm not saying that. Like, that's a very specific position, right? Like, I'm not saying that, but when you can have guys be multiple and they can take reps here or take reps there, that's big. That's a very unique trait for a defense, and I think that's something that we have.
Dude, I love listening to you talk football because I always learn something, and I know I can speak for our audience when I say that. Brian Bulaga, Alex Stroh, hanging out with you here on the Homer Hour. If you have any questions for Brian, feel free to text them in on the Carbless Talking text line, 800-990-3776. We'd love to get some of your questions before we wrap up the show at 6 o'clock today. Again, 800-990-3776 is the Carbless Talking text line. Your way into the show and your way into learning from the doctor of football, Brian Bulaga. Coming up next, want to dive in a little bit to this Elgton Jenkins situation, Brian. I know you've talked a ton about it, whether it's on this show or with Wilde and Tausch when you join them every week. But it's taken another turn now that he's shown up. I don't know if that's a leverage play. I don't know if that's a good thing, if it's a bad thing. So I will get Brian Bulaga's take on that coming up next. It's the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Monday, it's the Homer Hour. Alex Stroh, former Packer, Super Bowl champion Brian Bulaga with me. Chris Larson Pebble, as always, running the show, keeping us sounding at least decent. Brian, the Elgton Jenkins, I don't want to call this one a saga or saga. Jair was a saga. This one's just a little situation, just a blip on the radar, I think, for Elgton Jenkins. It has taken another turn as he reported to mandatory minicamp today. I would not expect him to do anything as those get underway tomorrow. As he, it sounds like, I don't know if this has fully been confirmed, but it sounds like would like a little bit more of a monetary kick as the Packers kick him from left guard to center this year after the loss of Josh Myers. So he showed up. To me, this sounds like it allows for a conversation slash could be a leverage play, but I've never really been in a scenario like this. What's your read on it?
Well, I mean, he certainly does not. I don't know what are the fines for missing minicamp? What is it, like 50 a day or 60 a day?
Probably
I don't know what it is.
Probably something in that wheelhouse, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so like, okay, so we look at it this way. He already missed his workout bonus, which I think was like $500K or $700K or whatever it was, right? So he's out $500,000. And now you miss minicamp. There's, you know, what, 230 or whatever it is grand again. So, like, you don't want to do that. You don't want to almost be out $1 million in the off season. Like, that's just not, it's not worth it, right? So go up to minicamp, right? He's not going to participate in the minicamp. There's absolutely no way he's going to participate in the minicamp. I kind of expected him to do this. There's no need for him to not show up to the minicamp, right? I mean, he's not going to participate. But I think the whole point, or what you kind of said, is that is what he's looking for. I think just a kick of guaranteed of the remaining contract that he has, right? Like, I don't think he is looking per se for a new deal. I don't think that's what he's looking for because he has 2 years left on this one. I think he's just looking for what he has left on this one to have some guaranteed money or money made guaranteed of what's left. And as he makes a position change for the good of the team, let me make that clear. As he makes a position change for the good of the team, right? This isn't something that, like, we'll just say this, like, it's not something that, like, I would imagine he went up and, or maybe he did, maybe he didn't, I don't know. But you look at the way they made their offseason moves. They made their offseason moves based on Elgton moving to center,
mm-hmm.
right? He's been a guard his entire career, and he's played some tackle, obviously. I know he's played tackle. But he's been a guard most of his career. So he's getting kicked inside and playing center, being asked to play center for the benefit of the team. That's what he's doing. So this to me is not by any stretch of the imagination like a selfish play. It's not. To me, it's none of that. This is just him looking at it going, I'm making a move, a position change that it could go well for me. It could be tough for me. I don't know what it's going to be, but all I'm looking for is a little more guarantee of this, the remaining 2 years of my contract, so that, you know, as we go through this thing, that I feel a little more security throughout the remaining 2 years of this. And that's really all it is. And I don't think – so when you look at it, I'm hoping Packer fans look at this that he's not – I mean, from everything that I know, that everything that's being reported, he's not looking to get more money. Like, he's not looking for a four-year extension or right. something like that. Like, that's not what's being asked. And to be honest with you, like – you signed a contract, right? Signed a contract. Okay, well, he just wants the money in the contract.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he's asking for is the money in the contract. So, to me, I hope this gets done. I hope they just figure this out because, like you said, this doesn't need to be a saga. It does not need to be a saga. And they need him to be in training camp and practicing. They need him snapping the football, making the identifications, getting on the same page with Jordan Love, so that Jordan feels comfortable with him at center. They can talk through things, obviously, with the way they both see things, defenses, and how they want to ID things and checks, that the other offensive linemen are getting off on the snap count with the way he snaps the football. There's a lot of different little intricacies that happen that haven't happened yet that need to happen with a new center. So I hope he gets back as soon as possible, and I hope it gets figured out. Like, I just do. Like, no, and still knowing that they probably run the silent count the exact same way that they did when I was there, because I know they did, because Aaron passed it down, and I'm sure Elton kept it, and I'm sure it's the exact same way. There's a little bit of an art form to that. Like, and obviously he learned, I mean, he got to be next to Corey, how Corey did it. Corey was probably the best at running the silent count as a center. So he knows how what it takes to do it. Like, he knows how tough it is. It takes practice. And how do you do that? You actually have to do it. So, like, I hope it gets done. I hope they get him in there. And this thing is just water under the bridge fairly, fairly soon.
Yeah, that's really well said. Back in, I don't remember what year this was, but we're through 2 years. So 2 years ago, before the 23 season, Jenkins signed, or excuse me, before the 22 season after his rookie extension, Jenkins signed a 4-year, $68 million contract, which had $24 million guaranteed. Rob Domofsky, as Brian just pointed out, Rob wrote on ESPN.com today, though the Packers don't usually renegotiate contracts with 2 years remaining, as Jenkins has on his deal, perhaps they could offer to guarantee some or all of his remaining money, considering there are no guarantees left in his contract. That from Rob Domofsky. And to your point, Brian, it's for the good of the team, right? You're getting your versatile offensive piece because he's played, as you mentioned, he's played center in pinches. He's played guard for most of his career. He's kicked out to tackle when that's been deemed as necessary. The guy's been nothing but consistent and awesome for you. So for mm-hmm. him to make a move, and I don't want to call it an uncomfortable move, right? Because I think he's comfortable playing center. He's just going to have to learn a thing or two more because this isn't out of a pinch necessarily. This is going to be his role in 2025. So it would be beneficial, I think, for both him and the Packers to just say, all right, you're right. You know what? Let's just pay you all the money guaranteed, and let's get to work, and hopefully this offensive line is even better than it was a year ago. It's as simple as that, in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, because And the thing is, like, I don't want to make this, like, bigger than it is, but, like, when he wasn't on the field against Philly last year, what happened?
A disaster happened.
Okay, like, and I understand that we signed a left guard, right? Like, I get mm-hmm. we brought in a left guard, and I get we drafted two guys. You know, we drafted Belton, and I get Jordan Morgan's back, and he's competing for a job, but, like, we don't know anything about Jordan Morgan yet. And I want to learn a lot about Jordan Morgan, right? I want to see him play. I want to see him, you know, compete, and I want to see what he's about. Like, I get it. And, like, you know, obviously they signed the free, you know, Brooks, the left guard from San Francisco. They think highly of him. Obviously he played for San Francisco. He's been in the scheme and all that. But, like, I can't say that I've watched a bunch of San Fran tape. So, like, I can't say I know a bunch about him. I'm sure – I mean, I'm obviously going to learn a lot about him once I start watching him. But, you know, you just because you bring in one guy and you say you remove Elton from it, it's not like you're solving the entire thing. So, right. Like, you want to make sure that you get him back in there. He's kind of the piece that kind of settles everything back in, right? Like, he's the guy that's going to settle everything back in. He's the longest, you know, standing member in that group. He's been there. You know, he's obviously been there, obviously, like you said, since LaFleur first got there. He was a rookie. He got drafted there since LaFleur was there. I'm pretty sure he's the veteran. Yeah, he is the veteran in that group.
Sure is.
So that's the guy you want back. You want him back. He's your oldest guy there. And, like, I get that we're on the youth movement, but there's nothing wrong with having a veteran guy in the group back. And they want him back. I get it. I get he's under contract, but, like, there's nothing wrong with negotiating with him to make everyone, you know, feel like, hey, this is where we're at. Let's just get this thing done, and everyone's good and happy, and let's move on. Like, nothing wrong with that.
The line of the day thus far on the Homer Hour from Brian Bulaga. There's nothing wrong with veterans. Elton Jenkins quickly approaching that scary age, though, Brian. He will turn 30 on December, the day after Christmas, December 26th. So you never know what will happen. But no, I mean, he's to your point, right? He goes out in that playoff game against Philly, and everything is a disaster from that point forward. Penalties after penalties after penalties. And it was just gross. That was pretty much the nail in the coffin once he exited that wild card game against Philadelphia. Thus why they go out and try to improve the offensive line. They go ahead and sign Aaron Banks, to your point.
Sorry. I said Brooks. It's Banks. Yes. My bad.
Close enough.
What a brain fart there.
That's okay. They draft Anthony Belton in the second round, right? They invest in this offensive line, trying to make sure that does not repeat itself as the Packers try to make a little bit longer of a run here in 2025. Hey, tune in to Behind the Bucks podcast on the Bucks Plus Audio Network, presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Behind the Bucks brings you exclusive access and untold stories about the greatest stars and moments in Bucks history. Go behind the scenes of Giannis's Emmy-nominated documentary. Learn about Damian Lillard's journey to becoming a top 75 player in NBA history and hear about the true origins of Bucks in Six culture created unknowingly by Brandon Jennings. Find Behind the Bucks on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, and wherever you get your podcasts. Behind the Bucks, presented by Gallagher. We'll wrap up the Homer Hour coming up next with the question. I least want Jair Alexander to sign with blank. Couple of minutes to go, the Homer Hour. ESPN Milwaukee, ESPN Beaver Dam. I'm Alex Stroop in for the Emmy Award winner Homer tonight. He'll be back with you tomorrow. Joined as we are each and every Monday on this very program by the Super Bowl champion, the doctor of football, Brian Bulaga, with me. All right, I posed it before the break. Gave you a couple minutes to think about it, Brian. The team I would least want Jair Alexander to sign with is blank.
I'm going to say Minnesota.
I agree with you.
Because I feel like their defense is good, and I feel like if he gets added to that defense with the D coordinator that they have, like, he'll find a way to get him in positions to play really well. I don't want him to go there. 'Cause, like, and now they're on, like, now that Aaron Jones obviously is there and he's playing well. Now they feel like they're on, like, a little streak of Packers playing good there, right? Like, for a while, they're on a streak that Packers would go there. They wouldn't really play good. But now they're on a streak where Packers are playing good after they leave Green Bay and go there. So that would be the spot that I wouldn't want. Now, the other spot is, to me, I don't know if they need him or if they need DB help, would be, I don't know if Detroit needs DB help. Or I don't know if Chicago needs DB help. I mean, if he stays in division, I think if he stays in division, period, that's not a good thing for us, right? Like, I think that's my thing. But I think Minnesota, especially.
I think Minnesota could use a corner, which is the scary part, because it's a fit for obvious reasons. And then it goes back to the thing you talked about before, which, I mean, okay. So I understand why this is the case, but it feels to me like it happens more in Green Bay, and maybe that's because I'm so hyper-fixated on the Packers and people that walk out the door. But is it absurdly high the amount of players that leave Green Bay and wind up in the NFC North? I understand, right? Those are the teams that see you the most. They've done the most homework on you. So naturally, those are the teams that maybe reach out to you or offer you the most money. But it seems like it happens to the Packers a hell of a lot more than other teams. And maybe I'm just making that up, where players leave in the same division.
I mean, it happens quite a bit. I mean, it's got to be, I mean, you kind of look at it too from a standpoint of, like you said, they see him a lot, right? You see him twice a year. You do a lot of tape study on him. You figure out good tendencies or, you know, things like that. Or you see him go against your best players, and that's how you get the best good information about a guy, right? Like, you know who your best players are. You know, you take said guy, you know, you would say, you know, I'll just look at it from an offensive lineman standpoint, right? Like, you take Zach Tom, right? He goes against Aiden Hutchinson, you know, twice a year. That's how you figure out how good he is, because that's how you're judging him. You're basing him off your best, you know, pass rusher or whatever it may be. So, like, that's how these teams kind of look at it. So, it makes sense.
It does.
Like, it makes sense. I mean, I looked at it from my point, you know, personally. I was like, I kind of want to get out of the division. I don't want to stay in the division. I don't want to be in the division. I couldn't see myself in the division unless it was in Green Bay. Like, you know what I mean? It just was too weird after 10 years going back in the division in a different uniform. It would just be too weird for me.
Well, TJ did that. TJ Lang, right? I mean, he finished his career in Detroit and ultimately ended up he's still in media in Detroit, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's like the Lions sideline reporter for the radio network out there, if I'm not mistaken. So, it happens all the time in division. So why was that important to you? Why did you decide, and ultimately you wound up with the Chargers for the final years of your career. But why was that so important to you? You're like, it feels like you're tarnishing a legacy after you win a Super Bowl in Green Bay, or what?
I guess it wasn't as much, like, you know, it wasn't really legacy, I guess, so to speak. But, like, you know. And people would say, like, why are you loyal to a fault? They let you, you know, they didn't re-sign you or something like that. Which, like,
they let you walk. Listen, right.
Yeah, like, I get it, but, like, there's something about it that it just would have felt weird to me, right? Like, it just I don't know why. Like,
did you have offers in the division?
If I did, because I told my agents before, like, there's not even a point to entertain them. Like, I literally said that. I said to him before we even started free agency, I'm like, hey, if it's one of the other three, I go, let's not even, like, there's no point.
You're a real one, Brian Bulaga. That's awesome. Well, that's so cool.
Because I'm not going to do it. Like, it was just a part of me that I wasn't going to do it. Like, it just wasn't going to be something that, first of all, like, you know, put myself through going back to, you know, it's just not going to be worth it.
You don't
want
to hear the boo birds, right?
Yeah, like, I already heard that, like, going to Chicago my entire time in Green Bay, like, you know, hearing the people in the stands, you know, from Chicago, because I was an Illinois kid or a suburb of Chicago kid. So then going back to Green Bay and hearing it again, I'd be like, oh, man, I'm literally just a trip. I'm just hearing it back and forth from the same people, like, just, it's like, what the heck? But it didn't make any sense. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where I valued my time in Green Bay a lot and what, you know, the team gave to me and my family and obviously the community. And just, you know, if you're going to go somewhere else, just that's great. I mean, obviously they went in a different direction. I went in a different direction. Let's just, you know, move and let's go somewhere different. And obviously if it would have stayed in the NFC and we would have played again, that is what it is, right? Like, no big deal. But it did need to be in the same division. There was going to be no need for that.
I like that. And I'm not giving TJ a hard time because I know he's a Michigan guy. He went to Eastern Michigan. So that ultimately was probably a family choice more so than anything for him. But just one of the many, 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 many examples of players leaving Green Bay and staying in the division. And it's very possible that Jair could end up in Minnesota. I would prefer if that doesn't happen because similarly to Aaron Rodgers, Brian, like, I as a fan of these guys, I want to see them go elsewhere and the change of scenery work well for them. Like, I would like to see Jair succeed similarly to how outside of October 26th, I want to see Aaron succeed, right? I want those guys to win and kind of have a rebirth of sorts, especially for Jair, who's had so many years now in a row where he just hasn't been healthy. Would love to see him go have like a Micah Hyde second act. That would be the ideal situation for me. Just prefer if it wouldn't be in the NFC North.
I agree. I mean, I always hope that for guys too, like especially ones that I played with. Whenever they go elsewhere, like I was hoping. I mean, even though I played against TJ and I played against Josh when he went to Chicago, I hope the best for those guys. I wanted them to do as well as possible. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I wanted them to have, you know, great seasons and play great. It's just it's the way things go in the NFL, man.
Sure is.
It's
sure
just
is.
The way it goes.
Brian Bulaga back with us Thursday right here on the Homer Hour with Homer. He'll be back tomorrow as well. Big thanks to Brian. Big thanks to Pebble. All of the best Jair Alexander conversation from today on ESPN Wisconsin is coming up right after this.